Before we officially start, I must give a special shout out to the boys over at Recovery. Much like myself and the lads, Chris and Ian are a couple of rugby fanatics like we all are, and they've created various products with recovery in mind based around natural CBD remedies. Head over to their Instagram page or website and use the code 3blokes, so number 3 followed by the word blokes, for 10% off all their natural products and feel the benefit today.
Good afternoon, good morning and good evening from wherever you are listening from. My name is Jamie Robinson and welcome to episode 109 of 3blokes and the Rugby League podcast. Callum Woody Wood is with me today. He's a two-man booth as unfortunately Jedi Moss Goddard is struggling at home with a COVID positive diagnosis at the minute. Best of luck to you, Jed, and hope you're catching up with some well-earned rest. Today, mate, we're going to cover the NRL semi-finals that have just been passed and the final round of Super League with a couple of discussion topics chucked in there as well. Welcome, Woody. Have you got a few things to say ahead of this week? It's been a good round of rugby league, but unfortunately not for your beloved Parramatta Reels.
Yeah, not for a Parra fan, unfortunately, mate, but at least it was a cracking game and I guess kind of mixed two games, really, kind of different stories, which we'll go into. But yeah, looking forward to the next round anyway as a neutral and seeing what happens into the final running.
Definitely so, mate. First game of the semi-finals in the NRL was a Manly Warringah Seagulls 42, the Sydney Roosters 6. A really sad ending for the Roosters, in my opinion. You know, I'll put spotlight on them initially because they were the most champion of sides in the NRL this season. Their squad has been depleted by the amount of injuries, you know, the suspensions, the black clouds they've had. Yet they've just played on and on and on with such courage and bravery. It's been absolutely outstanding. You know, they've managed to reach week 2 of the finals and it's nothing short of exceptional. Any other club with their injury toll would have been fighting for the wooden spoon, in my opinion. Not only injuries in the squad, but injuries to big, big players. And they've not only managed to almost replace them, but work on even better and adapt without them. I did mention last week, I wasn't going to be too cocky about it, but I said Manly were going to absolutely pace the Roosters. I thought they would do, and they obviously came out of the traps looking for blood. After a beyond disappointing performance last week, they came out quite quickly against the Roosters. You know, the game seemed pretty much dead and buried within the first 15 to 16 minutes. Manly were 18-0 up, but the man of the moment for me were Dally Cherry-Evans. You know, when he's on form, he's absolutely outstanding. When he's not on form, he's a bit of a scapegoat, in my opinion, and I think that probably speaks volumes. When he's not on form, along with Turbo, or when he's not even playing, Manly just out the side that they are when they are playing. It's as simple as that. His direction play in the middle is instructing blokes where to run, how to run, when to run, you know, holding up play perfectly, giving perfect passes when needed, allowing Turbo to pick his gaps and have a lot of space in the attacking line. He actually finished the game with one try, one line break, two line break assists, one try assist, three tackle breaks and 532 kicking metres off 13 kicks. That's even been blown up even more today because he's been announced along with Tommy Turbo as one of the five blokes up for the nominations for the Dally M Winners Medal, which is going to be announced next week. I mean, you can't blow it up even more. He's an exceptional player when he's got his head on, and he's got his head on a lot of the time more recently, especially as he's got on during his career. One of the best middle players going with the ball in hand and superb, and it was just really good to watch in this, especially when he's got the ball in hand and he's running. You know, people love watching him running halfback, and he personifies that as well. There's no real way to explain why the Roosters didn't have the impact in this game. I think everybody was probably expecting it. They've just been a defeated team throughout this campaign, and I think they eventually lost their way, if I'm honest. Out of the contest after 15 minutes, you know, the usual suspects will always try hard for them. You know, the Morris twins when they were playing, James Tedesco will always put his hand up, Angus Crichton, Satili Tupanua, but it's just too much for them. And when you've got the likes of Jake Trbojevic, who's straight up killing it in the middle of the park, he just ran the Roosters ragged with the ball in hand, and that's all the opposition needs, you know. Another Trbojevic with ball handling skills and someone else who they have to focus on in defence. Because what Manly do really well, in my opinion, Woody, you know, when you're a defender, you don't want to be looking for players who you're scared of with the ball in hand. You know, you've already got Turbo, you've already got Cherry-Evans, you know, you've got prop forwards like Tapau and Paseka, but then when you've got Jake Trbojevic, if he's running a ball at you, you know that you're going to get hurt in the tackle, but then you don't want on top of it that he's going to potentially produce an offload, he's going to potentially put his brother Tom through a gap, or he's going to sling it out the back to Cherry-Evans, mate. I mean, having someone like Jake Trbojevic in your squad is imperative, isn't it?
Big time, yeah, and I still think he's very understated. Well, not only is he kind of playing second fiddle to his brother. But like you say, there's so many other threats in that Manly team. And you know, you've got Olokoata and Schuster running about as well. There's so many threats in there. And I don't envy anyone who's kind of got to defend against them.
Definitely so, mate. 119 running metres in this game. One line break assist. And 29 tackles without a single miss. So 100% tackle efficiency. Superb from Jacob Jaboy, which is usually in about 40 tackles a game, but it obviously proves how much ball he had in this one, that he only managed 29. It was actually on the edges where the Roosters were being picked apart, which is usually not the case for them. They're usually quite strong. Angus Crichton and Sitile Tupanua missed 5 tackles each throughout the game. And when you've got the likes of Turbo running at them, you know, Jason Saab, Ruben Garrick on the outside, Morgan Harper, who's on really good form, and the likes of Josh Schuster, who's just selling passes, and they've got such an electric backline. It must be absolutely exhausting to defend. Shout out as well to Dylan Walker, who, in my opinion, had his best game of the season, best game in a long, long time as well. We know he's got a troubled record on and off the field, but it's good to see him just playing some rugby league. You know, he got a try, 160 run meters, one line break assist, and 6 tackle breaks. All of that will be exceptional for a player playing 80 minutes. But he actually played 46. So really, really good. I mean, he's a bit of a veteran these days. I think he's pushing 30. And I think people would still kind of call him a utility player. I think his best position is kind of that roaming middle forward. He plays a good 13. He plays a good centre position. Can play fullback, can play centre, can play 6 as well. So modern day NRL, it fits in absolutely perfectly. And last but not least, Josh Morris, who rounded off a world-class career, in my opinion. What a bloke, along with his brother Brett, who obviously would have bowed out in this game as well if it wasn't for injury. One of the most consistent all-round centres of his generation, and won absolutely everything he could possibly win. Really hope he enjoys retirement, although he could easily be in the game very soon. I believe his brother Brett is going straight into coaching. That's been announced, and I don't think Josh will be too far behind him as well. Woody, mate, it was talked about in the commentary booth in the actual game, and even the past couple of weeks, Trent Robinson has been very timid in playing Sam Walker in terms of, you know, getting him involved in the bigger games, and he doesn't want to hype too much pressure on him. But bringing him on at 34 minutes when, you know, for argument's sake, the game was probably dead and buried. At that point, should he really be bringing him on at all, or is it just too late by that point?
It is too late by that point, and can only kind of attribute it to, like you say, not bringing him into the big games and protecting him a bit. But when he's played, you know, 75-80% of the season, 80 minutes in there, it is a bit strange. And then if it's about his defence in the middle, and last week it worked out in the end, bringing him on late on. But you know, the Titans game and the game before that, I think it was the Raiders, he played 5 and 7 minutes or something, which, you know, it's not long enough for him to get in the game. It kind of felt like this week, too little, too late, and kind of got him on there for the sake of it. Lockie Lamb's obviously back, and Drew Hutchinson might be seen as a bit more solid, maybe. But you know, they needed some injection early on against this Manly team whilst they're still in it. And I think looking at next season as well, when Keary's back in the fold and Walker's not a rookie anymore, it'd be interesting to see how that kind of dynamic works out between those four as well. But yeah, it's definitely a strange one.
What about the other side of the coin, mate? Tommy Turbo played 64 minutes. Do you think that was smart from Desi Hasler not to play in the whole game and risk any potential injuries?
I think so, yeah. And kind of commentary were getting themselves in the tiz about bringing him off earlier, but in kind of wrapping him up in cotton wool, I think they were 30 points ahead at that point, 36-6. It might have been 15 to go. And, you know, they're not going to get past the Bunnies and get through a grand final if Tommy Turbo's injured. There's no way he's the, you know, absolute key asset. And that he'd have wanted to come off, but you know, it does make sense with an even bigger game on the way.
Who's winning next week then, mate? Let's preview it a bit. Manly versus the South Sydney Bunnies. Huge game. Obviously, biggest game of either of their seasons. Bunnies have had 3 years in a row where they've made the prelims and not prospered. Manly started off this season with 4 consecutive losses before they hit a beautiful purple patch. Now they're in the semis. Who are you backing and why?
Well, every single prediction I make turns out wrong, so I'm sure Manly fans will be pleased to hear. I'm going to back the Bunnies to just about sneak it. And first of all, the game's going to be a cracker. I know Bunnies don't have Latrell. See, Manly do have Tommy Turbo back this time. It's been 6 months since they played each other, which it was the same with Manly and Roosters last week. So you can't really take much off the form against each other this year. And in that game, Latrell was playing and Turbo wasn't. But I'm gonna put it down to Wayne Bennett for me, and I'm gonna back him to see the Bunnies sneak through. So, what about you, mate? Who are you backing?
It's hard, and I do want to side with Manly. I think Manly have got enough to beat Bunnies at full tilt, even without Latrell. But Wayne Bennett just has it up his sleeve, doesn't he? We saw it the other week against Penrith. They can grind out a win. I think it's going to fall on Adam Reynolds. Adam Reynolds is a top player. It's potentially going to be his last ever game for the Bunnies. He will not want to go out in another prelim. He's played in the other three. It will be absolutely torturous if they lost four in a row without making a grand final. I'm going to go the opposite to you, mate, so we can have a laugh about it next week. I will go with Manly. I think Manly will get to the final, and it'd be great to see Turbo in a final in a full packed out crowd as well.
And that's probably going to be 0-5 in favour of you on the predictions then. But there's been a lot of talk throughout the season and more recently about, you know, Manly being labelled these flat track bullies and whatnot for not beating any of the big three sides. But do you think that's kind of a fair assessment, or, you know, is it unfair because they haven't played them enough times?
I've seen the reports, and obviously it's Ryan Girdler who said it. And what evidence has he backed it up with in terms of being bullies?
Yeah, I'm with you there. Like, you know, you can only beat what's put in front of you. They just put the Roosters away by nearly 40 points, and it's not their fault that the Roosters are a bit depleted and whatnot. And that same Roosters side has put plenty of teams away well this year. So, you know, we'll see this week, but I don't think it is a fair assessment of them for me.
Coming on to the second and final semi-final game from this year. Sorry to bring it up, mate. It was sudden death. Penrith Panthers against the Parramatta Reels. Big derby. Gus Gould said on before the game, this game could be played on the moon and it would still be a huge derby for both sides. But the Panthers just edged it 8-6 and arguably the game of the season, bud.
Yeah, I'd back that sentiment, definitely. And obviously, absolutely devastated for my boys, but what an absolute ripper of a match. And it really was a bit of a war of attrition. You know, sometimes you'd almost want to kind of get easily put away in these games and lose 50-0 maybe because it might hurt a bit less, but I'm kind of just proud of the way the Eels went in that. And like you say, I think that is the game of the season for me. And a proper finals derby. You know, seasons are on the line. This is sudden death for someone. Fortunately for me and Parra, Panthers who edged it, thanks to a penalty goal right at the end of the first half. 8-6 to Penrith at half-time. And amazingly, if the game away went, that's how it stayed. Kind of, like I said, it feels weird to say this. It's slightly contradictory, but Panthers were the better team on the whole, but I felt the Eels deserved to win, and that might be a bit of supporter bias, fair enough. But, you know, the sheer way we hung in there to keep it a one-score game, and then a lot of the chances which went begging late on. But, you know, it wasn't to be, and the drought continues. We took an early lead. The Eels against the run of play. Dylan Edwards, who I said last week needed to be rushed back into fullback for Panthers, couldn't deal with Big Moses Foreman. One of Blake capitalised to get me out of my seat for the first of hundreds and hundreds of times over the game. After that, there's an absolute Panthers onslaught. Somehow, only resulted in a capable try and 4 points from Cleary's boot. But now, it must be said, they did turn down quite a few very easily kickable penalties. You know, there were 4 points which they easily could have got, but they went for the scrum players and tried to get a score off. Now, like I said in there, Parra showed massive heart, which we've missed for large parts of the season, probably most of the season, to hold out on the line. And, you know, a lot of time with defending from a set of six from a metre out, which we somehow kept it out. Got a slice of luck. There's a few disallowed Penrith efforts, but couldn't take any of the chances we had. And Junior Paolo dropping the ball cold on third tackle. Now, a metre out with seconds left is a very, very painful way to go out. But, you know, that's the game. That's what we believe. That's why we watch it. That's why we love it. And looking at the way the teams were matched up, the packs were really, really well matched. Absolutely clattered each other for 80 minutes, you know. Can pick out all the players on there. Liam Martins, Isaiah's, RGC and Paolo for the Eels. Awesome. And the team stats overall had literally nothing in them, which won't surprise you. It's 49% possession to Penrith against 51. Both had 84% completion. One Penrith line break to two for the Eels, which shows what a sort of premium commodity they were. 35-36 on bus and very similar play the ball speeds and kick meter. So, you know, there literally was nothing in it. Mentioned Dylan Edwards in there. I thought he managed it well in attack. He made 200 plus metres, but he was really struggling in defence, and especially under the kick receipts. Like I said, that Moses bomb led to our only try. And Mitch Moses, as ever, had his usual kicking boots on. He's absolutely peppering him. There was another miscommunication as well with Billy Keekow, which nearly led to another try. There's a lot of poor decisions under the high ball throughout, and his positioning was a bit off. I don't know if that's because he's had the week off. I know there's been questions in the past over it, hasn't there? So he's a very good attacker, but a little bit to kind of be wandered for under the high ball in defensive. Penrith, proven this all season too, but their scrum plays are second to none. Every single player knows their role. They're able to switch it up at the drop of a hat, and very, very rarely do they make an incorrect decision. And if they have a scrum 15 to 20 metres out from the try line, they'll nearly guarantee a try, which is even more amazing that they didn't score more in this game. They had a fair few scrum plays, which Eels held out on. As ever, not news, because say this every week, Nathan Cleary, just about the difference, and having an actual hooker. You know, Eels down to our, well, I say fourth choice hooker, but he's not a hooker. So you don't have Nathaniel Roach, no Joey Lessica's filled in, Reed Marnie out for the season. And, you know, I really do feel for Ray Stone. It wasn't his night. Couldn't pass it out of dummy to save his life. What are your kind of thoughts on that performance? I don't want to bag him because he's had to step into an unfamiliar position. He's played really well for the season in the pack. But how do you feel for him, and how much did you think that affected the game?
Yeah, I think he did the best of what he was given, really, wasn't he? I mean, who could have guessed that the position Parramatta would have been in at this point? You would have been putting all your money on Reed Marnie having a game of the season. And to say that he's not there, Joey Lussick's not there, Nathaniel Roach's not there. Parramatta probably had some of the best depth in terms of hooker in any team at the start of the year. And to say that they ended up not only going down to all three hookers out, but what he's done, is he a back rower, I believe? Back rower slash prop? He did well. He did well. I mean, the other week he made 50 tackles with no missed tackles. That's the reason why he's there. He's not there for his distribution. It's just a shame that the key moments in it came from probably having an inexperienced hooker.
Yeah, and then kind of a few freebies where he's trying to chuck it out of dummy, you know, on halfway, second tackle, and it's slipped out of his hands or whatnot. Quite a few talking points from the game, and one of them was the free interchange the Pampers got late on when Tevita Pangai Jr. came on for its Kenny. What were your thoughts on that one? That's caused a lot of the burn. I know the NRL are kind of investigating that now, and there might still be some repercussions from that.
What was the main reasoning behind the change? I've not actually found it anywhere.
Ankle injury, as far as I can see, and I don't know, maybe some foul play on Pangai Jr. for his sub earlier on, so he could come back on and work it out.
This is what obviously we were saying it earlier on the season, that the main coverage has said it throughout all the season. If you make a rule in the NRL, teams and coaches will find a way to bend round it, and it's going to come back and bite people in the backside in big games of the season. It'll happen in Origin, it'll happen in a grand final. I don't think it had too much on the game, if I'm honest. If Penrith were losing and Pengai Jr. ended up scoring the winning try, there'd be chaos. But they make these free interchange rules and they will be bent, and they will be, you know, people will find loopholes.
Yeah, I think the reason it's kind of got so much behind it is because a lot of the rugby public are saying the Eels were robbed. I'm not going to be one of those who jumps on that and kind of blames the refereeing decisions. We had plenty of chances, and, you know, we're on their line a metre out with 30 seconds to play. But there were a lot of questionable refereeing decisions, a lot against Parra, actually. I think the penalty count was 7-2 against. We had Jerome Luai holding Moses when Fergo made a break. The trainer stopping play for an ankle injury when, you know, we're getting a six again. Guffo stripped in a three-man tackle, and also the Smith high tackle, which Penrith scored that penalty against the end of the first half. So, like I said, not blaming the ref for it, but what are your thoughts on kind of the overall refereeing performance from this game?
There was a point in the game, I can't remember who it was, but the trainer slash physio stopped the game or requested that the referee stop the game when the player was off the field. And I thought the player had to be on the field, and I thought the player had to have a head injury for the game to be stopped. So I might be wrong in that, and we might need justification, but I'm sure you have to be at least on the field for the game to be stopped.
That was my understanding as well.
Yeah, and the Luai holding back, he's been doing that all year, and he's been getting away with it as well. Well, still getting away with it in this game. And it's not only holding players back when they're going through in the attacking line. Keep an eye out for it, because I've seen it a couple of times. When he does a grubber kick through and his opposite number turns round to chase the ball, he sometimes trips them up. Or he clatters into him, quote unquote, as he's going through the line, and he'll purposely knock them over so they can't chase the ball. he's very clever at doing it. And if you can get away with it, keep getting away with it, because he obviously has been doing, but it's definitely something for the officials to watch out for, because I think it's starting to get picked up now.
Yeah, it's those dark arts, isn't it? And those kind of little one percenters which can win you a game like this. Like I said, I'm not blaming those instances. And just looking forward for the Eels then, because, you know, they've got no more games to look forward to now. And points in the season where it was definitely Brad Arthur out. He'd kind of come to the end of his tenure and the few people linked with it. But do you think then one more year at least for Brad Arthur, or is that coming to the end of the cycle?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think Arthur's up there with one of the longest tenured coaches now at the minute, obviously barring the likes of Bellamy and Trent Robinson and whatnot. But I'm just not sure what else he can do for Parramatta with this squad. It would be very interesting to have a fresh pair of eyes at Parramatta with this squad, because everyone knows that this squad can be a top four side and probably should be a top four side with the likes of Gutherson, Moses, Paolo, Marnie, all in the peak of their careers, along with probably a few others that I've missed out. And they've got a nice sprinkling of experience. They've got some good, really good youngsters, even leading the likes of Dylan Brown, who's playing in a key position. I don't know if Brad Arthur's become a bit stagnant, but I guess you can't look at his performances as a coach and say that he's made a mess, because you've consistently played playoff football. You've probably got to stages in the playoffs where you'd be more than happy with it at the start of the year. But I think Parramatta should be doing more than what they actually are. So I don't think they'll get rid of him. Has he got one more year on his contract?
Yeah, one more.
Unless you go ahead and win, you know, the league leaders next year, the minor premiers, I think it probably will be his last year next year. I think they'll look somewhere else.
Yeah, it's a weird one, like you say. You know, you get to this stage and lose out to the Panthers by 2 points. It looks like a successful season, but some of the performances in the back end were very drab. And like you say, with the squad we've got. But, well, that's the Eels to bed for another year anyway. I'll come back in pre-season, I can cry about them all over again. But looking forward for the Panthers then, and playing the Storm this coming week. You know, we had this nailed on all year as the grand final, absolutely, but fortunately not the game before. So how are you seeing that one, mate, and who are you backing in this one?
It never ends how we wanted to, was it? Me and Jed spoke about in the playoff previews that it'll be the first time in 10 or 11 years that this has happened, and then the Penrith go and mess up against the Bunnies. It'll be a mad game. I think both games this weekend, as they should be, the prelim finals before the grand final, will be absolutely world-class. It's the best of the best. It's the top four best sides in rugby league in all of the world. This game is the top two. It's the best two teams that have been around for the past two or three seasons. Hopefully, it's got all the best players in it as well. There looks to be Josh Adokar's coming back, Dale Finucane's coming back. I'm not sure on Brandon Smith. I don't know if he's been ruled out. I think Brian Toto might be on his way back as well. It's going to be an absolute barnstormer. And truthfully, I'm not entirely sure who's going to win. If you give me a lump sum of money, I'd stick it on the Storm. But Penrith, they will be looking at this all week. They'll remember last year's grand final. They'll remember losing against the Bunnies. They'll remember the dip in form mid-season for Origin. Players like Cleary, players like Luai, players like Yeo are not going to be wanting a back-to-back failure again. It's going to be a huge, huge game, probably the biggest game of the season. But my money would probably be on Storm, if I'm honest. What about you?
I think I'd have to go with Storm as well, yeah. And it's kind of a question of whether the week off has helped or not, or, you know, Panthers having to come through kind of adversity in a real tough game will actually help them and kind of perk them up. But yeah, I think I would have to go with Storm, but I definitely don't think it's going to be easy. And, you know, a lot of people were expecting them to roll Panthers based on previous, but not for me. It's going to be a tight one.
Very much looking forward to our reviews next week, mate. Coming on to the Super League final round, obviously everything was pretty much done and dusted apart from the last playoff spot. Leeds and Tunes have been relegated, and Catalan Dragons have won the League Leaders' Shield. Fair play to them, an exceptional achievement in Northern Hemisphere Rugby League and for Catalan as a club as well. Coming on to the games, Castleford Tigers 24, Warrington Wolves 40, Leeds Rhinos 36, Hull Kingston Rovers 12, Salford Red Devils 26, St Helens 14, Wakefield Trinity 44, Hull FC 12, Wigan Warriors 12, Catalan Dragons 8, and Huddersfield Giants 42, Leeds Centurions 24. Obviously, there's some surprising results there. We saw Catalan and St Helens put a bit of weakened squads out there. Catalan obviously lost the last two games since they won the League Leaders' Shield, and KR as well are going into the playoffs in a bit of you know, poor form. Do you think this is almost, I know they're probably not doing it too much on purpose, but going into a playoff situation, mate, you want to be going in with a bit of momentum, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's kind of been a bit weird for Catalan since the Magic weekend game and secured the league leader shield. No, spoke about them getting the shield on the pitch at half time when they were losing at home to Huddersfield after being 16 or 18 nil up. So it's definitely not ideal for them going in, but I do think they will have a bit of bounce back and I think they'll go deep in the playoffs. OKR on the other hand, I think, unfortunately, probably run out of steam. And they've got no Ryan Horn. I think Matt Parcells out for the rest of the season as well. So I reckon it probably will be the end of the road for them against Warrington this week.
Yeah, I was going to say to Mick, previews this week, who have you got kind of Wigan, Leeds, Warrington, OKR?
Well, I know I'm going to speak about if Leeds can make a dent in the playoffs and I think they will and I think they'll do it this week starting at Wigan. I know Wigan beat Catalans this week, but I just don't see that much from them at the minute. And even with their, you know, stringing a few wins together, none of them have been very convincing. And for Leeds, I think Aledski and maybe Luke Gale are coming back soon. So I think they'll go well, Leeds. And yeah, got a back wire against KR. Like I say, I think probably the end of the road for KR. What has been a great season for them, to be fair. You know, come from down the bottom of the league to make the playoffs, fair play to them. And, you know, don't rule them out yet anyway, just based on what I think.
Very much so, mate. And two big wins for two of the probably underachieving clubs this year, Wakefield and Huddersfield, 240-odd wins. Solid wins to end out the season and probably looking for a bit more improvement next year.
Yeah, it's a good way to finish off. Like you say, it's a bit of a mixed bag overall in the season and so easy for Wakefield that they had David Fifita kicking goals at the end. And I know Mason Lino in that game as well broke the record for consecutive goal kicks in 32 or 33, I think, before he missed one from the touchline. For Huddersfield, yeah, they started terribly this season, but kind of showing a bit of form and picked up a few wins. And now, on the subject of Lee and their points, I know Andrew Ferguson, I believe, has been running a bit of a battle between them and Lee on Twitter on who's going to win the points per game trophy. And Lee have actually beaten Wigan in points per game this season. So shout out to them for that. I can take that down with them.
I did not know that. Fair play. Last but not least, mate, obviously going into the playoffs next week, we'll start. But who's your team to kind of watch out in that playoffs? Are you cheering for Catalan or do you think someone else is going to pip them?
I really like to see Catalans do. I know winning the League Leader Shield's great and they won the Challenge Cup back in 2018, but they could go on and win the Grand Final. That'd be mega for the game. It's hard to look past Saints, really, isn't it? But, you know, I'm going to go with Leeds for my Smokey and see if they can do a Leeds of old and come from fifth and, well, came fifth and win the old thing. So, yeah, I'd stick a bit of money on Leeds if I had some to bet.
I could never, ever, ever predict Leeds Rhinos for anything. So I think for me, it's just, I say it every year, but someone different. I think Catalan, Warrington, OKR, it's a bit of an outside bet. I'd love to see any of them three win it. Catalan, Warrington final will be absolutely perfect. I think that'd be brilliant for the sport. But similar, mate, I can't see past St. Helens. They've got a great squad, an experienced squad, and also a young squad as well. We've already interviewed Jack Wellesby. That's coming up, obviously, at the back end of this week. But he seems really confident. They've got a brilliant squad there at St. Helens, and it's going to be hard to look past them. I just think the fact there's two players who I think is going to mess that around. I think that's Sam Tompkins and James Maloney. I'm really looking forward to see how them two play in that deciding game in 2 weeks' time as well. Brilliant. Thank you very much, Woody. Obviously, a bit of a back and forth between myself and you today. Obviously, Jed's a bit unwell, so sending our well wishes, I'm sure everyone else is who's listening. Cheers for joining me, Woody, and thank you everybody for listening to episode 109 of Three Blokes and a Rugby League podcast. Head on over to all our social media pages where you'll find a variety of content which will hopefully pique your interest. Also, give us a rating on our podcasting platforms if possible, please, because it really, really does help us. We are available on all podcasting platforms. Keep an eye out for any future podcasts and interviews or have a listen to our archive. I've said it every single week. Tom Johnston, Emily Rudge, Jody Cunningham, Barry McDermott, Adrian Morley, Tommy Makinson, Reece Lynn, Joe Philbin, and this coming week we have Mr. Sergio Aguero of Rugby League himself. We've got Jack Wellesby. We've already interviewed him. He is a top young professional. He's going to be in this sport for years to come. Keep an eye out for that one. Really good insight. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch you all down the road.